Hello, you're listening to Romeo And, a podcast about masculinity, nice guys, sexism, and what it means to be a man in our society today. I'm your host, Street Saint. So I've talked about the online game League of Legends on the podcast before. In case you missed that episode, League of Legends is a competitive online game that has, and continues to push the envelope in more ways than one. I talked about how the game has broken all kinds of records in terms of being the most popular video game in the world, and how it's shaped the competitive gaming scene, and how because of League, more people are recognizing the viability of playing video games professionally. I also talked about how the developers at Riot Games have tried to break certain stereotypes and tropes in the gaming industry. Notably, they've created female characters that vary in shape and size and attitude, instead of having female be their primary defining feature. As I said when I talked about League before, I'm a huge fanboy myself, and I regularly follow the competitive League of Legends scene. Well, I'm excited to announce that the North American League of Legends Championship Series, or LCS, now has its very first female athlete. On August 12th, two challenger teams, which you could think of as minor league teams, they faced off against each other for the opportunity to play in the main LCS tournament. The team known as the Renegades boasted a lineup of ex-LCS professional players, as well as known rookies, so they were already a crowd favorite. And in the team's support role was Maria Creveling, better known by her in-game handle, Remilia, one of the few professional League of Legends players who happens to be female. Now, there are plenty of female League of Legends players. There are professional teams that are all female, in fact. However, never have any of those teams, or any woman ever, played in any major or premier tournaments. Not as a member of the team's starting roster, anyway. If the Renegades won this best-of-five series against their opponent Team Coast, they would officially earn their ticket into the LCS, granting Remilia the title of first female pro player. And so the series went to all five games, Coast winning the first and the third, and the Renegades winning the second and the fourth. At this point, I and the tens of thousands of others tuning into this game, including the live audience, were on the edges of our seats. And in the action-packed finale to the series, the Renegades earned themselves a clean ace, meaning they defeated each of the opposing members of Coast without suffering any casualties themselves. And it allowed them to close out the game in 36 minutes of play. And though this is certainly exciting news for the Renegades and Remilia, it's also a difficult time. Not long after winning this pivotal game, Remilia released a statement on Reddit which called into question whether she would continue playing for the Renegades when the team competed in the LCS next year. It came as a shock to some, but for some of Remilia's more devoted fans, it was a fear they may have had for a long while. For you see, becoming a full-fledged professional player comes with its perks as well as its harsh realities. When playing in the challenger scene, players can enjoy a certain level of obscurity. You may develop a sizable fandom, but joining the big leagues is different. Once you're in the LCS, you're in the spotlight. Your performance is suddenly watched by millions of people, as opposed to the hundreds or maybe even thousands you might be used to. And not all of these people are going to be fans. LCS players are constantly judged, both fairly and unfairly, for everything they do. Like any professional athlete, if you're not performing to the level that's expected of you, even some of your most adoring fans might turn on you. People have often pointed to this pressure as the cause for many challenger teams and players to do poorly during their first games in the LCS. Suddenly you're playing in front of a live audience of sometimes thousands of people, and after your games you go on social media to find millions of people commenting on your performance, highlighting all of your weaknesses. And while you will certainly earn yourself some devoted fans, you'll almost certainly gain some enemies as well. That's just how competitive sports go. So not only do you have people pointing out all of your technical misplays, you also have people who are just simply insulting you for whatever reason they could find. Some players are demonized for coming off as too cocky or selfish. Some are criticized for their looks. Some have been harassed about their family, their personality, their dress. The list goes on. But now you add the fact that you're female? In a sport where the majority of fans are teen to college-age boys? All I can say to Remilia is... good luck. Remilia is known for receiving a lot of harassment as it is, not entirely unexpected. League of Legends is unfortunately known for having a sometimes toxic community. And as a woman at the top of the Challenger League, she's an easy target. Remilia has deleted a number of her social media accounts in the past, presumably due to the levels of harassment she's been receiving. And though the majority of her followers are likely adoring fans who are proud of her success, it's difficult to ignore all of the hate you receive. Going back to how awesome a company I think Riot Games is, they made it a point during the Renegades matches not to highlight Remilia's gender. The commentators didn't ooh and ah over the fact that a girl was playing the game. Remilia supposedly requested that the cameras not focus on her during the games, and Riot actually accommodated her. In any other scenario, you would expect Remilia's gender to be the only thing anyone could really talk about during such an important match. But instead, it wasn't brought up once. Not even when the Renegades won and Remilia became the first female LCS player. No one at Riot made any big fuss about it. But again, this was a Challenger Series game. Once Remilia is in the LCS, she won't be able to keep the cameras off her all the time. People will want interviews, photographs, autographs. In the statement she made after the games, Remilia mentioned that her goal was to qualify for the LCS, basically to prove that a woman could do it. She said that she was happy she reached that goal, but felt she had no further obligation to play in the actual tournament. She further stated that she didn't want to be put on some LGBT agenda or anything like that, which is a nod to some of the assumptions people have made about her sexuality. This is the problem you often face as a minority. Sometimes you just want to do things for the same reason anyone else wants to do them. But because you're female, or black, or Latino, or gay, or whatever, you have to also be an ambassador to your minority group. Remilia won't ever be able to escape the fact that she is a female pro gamer, even if she would much rather be a pro gamer, a non-gender-specific pro gamer, like all of her teammates. In any interview she's in, she's almost certainly going to be asked, how does it feel to be a woman in this business, or what is it like to play against all these men? Sometimes you kind of wish someone else got there first, so you wouldn't have to deal with all the press about it. That said, it's worth noting that Remilia does actually deserve to be where she is, despite what some of her critics might say. That maybe she's on the team just because she's a woman. Affirmative action or whatever. But to get to the top of the Challenger tier, as she's done, requires a level of play and dedication that can't be downplayed. She's also proven countless times in her actual games that she's one of the most mechanically and technically skilled support players in the league. Besides, the Renegades' goal as a team is to be as competitive as they can be. They're not going to put a less skilled player on their roster just to fulfill some milestone. As I said in the last episode of the podcast, there's no reason to bar a person from playing a sport simply due to their gender. Remilia had to compete with countless other men to gain her spot on the Renegades team. She proved her mastery of the game, and she earned a spot on the team because of it. They didn't have to create a WLCS just to accommodate her. And I'm happy that Remilia has been able to achieve what she has, despite the negativity that it's been thrown her way. And as it stands now, Remilia seems to have decided to stay on the Renegades team and play in the LCS next year. and I'm so looking forward to this next season. I already know who I'm going to be rooting for, and not just because they happen to have a female player. Next on the podcast, I'm going to be answering some of your questions, another brand new segment in the second season, and I'll be telling you all about that. So stay tuned. That's coming up next here on Romeo and. Today on the podcast, I'm going to take some time to field some of your questions. I always love hearing from all of you, and so I wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to respond to the questions you all send me. So this episode is going to be dedicated specifically to that. That said, I encourage you to keep sending in your thoughts and questions. Email contact@stsaint.com or call in at 516-514-7878. And I will do my best to answer those the next time I do a Q&A episode. But last week, I was in Ohio hosting a workshop on the topic of present-day masculinity. It went really well, and a lot of great questions were raised. And I thought this would be a perfect opportunity to speak to some of those questions. At one point during the workshop, I asked the audience who considered themselves to be a feminist. About half the group raised their hands, and many others just looked really uncomfortable. Someone asked if I meant feminist in the sense of ideology or practice. I knew what the person was referring to, but I wasn't sure how to respond. Feminism has for a long time been a movement with a variety of different ideologies, and not every feminist always prescribes to each one. Nowadays especially, feminism seems to elicit conflicting reactions from both liberal and conservative people. More so than ever, feminism seems to have become a dirty word, and it's difficult to say just who is to blame for this. But I will do my best to go over why we're so afraid of the word feminism. As I said, feminism has always been a complex idea. The goal has always been to ensure women have equal rights and status in society as men do. But the methods for achieving this have varied. When you look at first wave feminism, there were very clear milestones to achieve. The main one being the right to vote, which was denied to women at the time. When you look at more recent struggles regarding pay discrepancies, access to birth control, sexual harassment, and so on, the path is no longer as clear. People dispute what causes women to ultimately earn less than men. People dispute how much access women should have to birth control. And trying to combat harassment in any form is going to be an uphill battle. And so feminism has become more and more split, some people wanting to fight for certain causes, some wanting to fight for others. And then the question of how to achieve each goal is often disputed. As a result, it's difficult for feminists to identify with one another. How can you call yourself a feminist if there are groups of people out there who share the label, but are fighting for something you're completely against? It's for this reason more and more feminists are giving up the title and seeking something that more accurately represents their ideals. It's the same reason you have Baptists and Protestants and Methodists and Catholics. Though they all consider themselves to be Christian, their ideologies have grown so far apart over time that they needed to distinguish themselves from the others. Whether or not we'll see some kind of subset of feminism form in the near future is still a mystery, and even if such a group emerges, it's impossible to say just what their specific ideologies will be. And so, going off of that, another question that often comes up is why feminists so passionately shut down any arguments against them. This is a question that's often asked by men's rights activists. And there's a whole lot to this. Part of the reason some feminists are so outspoken is because they feel women have lacked a voice. Women are often told, or at the very least, it's implied, that they're not capable of making good decisions. Women are often shamed for being too emotional. Men are supposed to have the final say in everything. Feminism seeks to turn that around. As in, empower women's voices, not shut down the voices of men. However, that's exactly what some people feel is happening. And in some instances, that's exactly what is happening. Because feminists can get so passionate about speaking their mind, they end up doing exactly what they sought to stop, which is silence the voices of a group of people. Most men have dominated women in the past not because they wanted to, but because they had no opposition. They just had no idea that they were doing it. Similarly, women didn't speak out because they felt they weren't in a position to do so. With feminism, guys have had to learn that they couldn't just take women for granted. But some are feeling that they're not allowed to speak out at all. And there's a fine line here somewhere, but no one is exactly sure when it's being crossed. On the flip side of the coin, you have the men's rights activists, or the MRAs. I've talked about them before as a backlash movement, which is directly opposed to feminism. Like with feminism, the MRAs all come from different lines of thinking and have varying opinions about what's wrong with feminism as well as what should be done about it. In fact, I'd say there's a good number of men's rights activists, I'd even venture to say that the majority of them, actually agree with the basic goals of feminism, which is to ensure both women and men have equal rights and social status. Men's rights activists aren't fighting against feminism because they want women to be second-class citizens. They're fighting against feminism because they feel threatened by it. They feel the movement has gone too far and that it's persecuting people who don't deserve it. A lot of MRAs don't hate feminists, they hate a particular group of feminists. And sometimes just one specific feminist who they feel represents the whole movement. But on the other hand, there are a lot of men's rights activists who hate feminists simply because they challenge the status quo. This sort of goes along with some of my talks about privilege. A lot of people, both men and women, simply don't have to deal with the things a lot of feminists are protesting. And as a result, they think feminists are just complaining about nothing, or complaining just for attention. Ultimately, they just find feminists annoying, and so they hate feminists for that reason. Feminists don't actually fight for anything that would negatively affect these men's rights activists' quality of life or their well-being. They're just tired of hearing about feminism, or they don't want things to change just because a feminist complained about it. Like I said, it's a privilege thing, but also a power thing. I watched a video recently that broke down the reason I think a lot of men's rights activists rally against feminism. It's a 6-part YouTube series called Why Are You So Angry? By Innuendo Studios. I'll have a link to it in the show notes so you can find it. But ultimately, it says that the arguments feminists make are moral ones, and no one wants to feel their morals are being questioned, especially when they consider themselves to be good people. And so, to avoid the risk of finding out that they're right, they seek to shut down these arguments preemptively. Morality is an extremely touchy subject. When you bring up a topic of disagreement, generally people can discuss it or agree to disagree. However, when you challenge a person's morals or their value system, they instinctively get very defensive and often argumentative. Because if a person discovers that their value system is flawed, they suddenly have to not only come to terms with anything wrong they may have done in their life up to that point, but they also have to change their entire lifestyle and mindset to correct it. And the older you get, the less you want to have to deal with all of that hassle. And so you throw up your defenses, you tell the person off, you give some throwaway reasons for why you're right and why their argument is invalid, and you change the subject or simply write the person out of your life. And you might not even know why you're doing it. It's all subconscious. If I were to say something like, Tom Cruise is a terrible actor, some of you might have a strong reaction. You might agree, you might disagree, you might not care at all. But if I were to say something like, incest should be legal, you might have a more visceral reaction. You might question my motives, you might get upset. You might simply cast the notion from your mind. And that's the difference between an opinion-based argument and a moral one. So why do men's rights activists hate feminists? A lot of reasons. And why do feminists hate MRAs? A lot of reasons. Another big question I was asked during my workshop was, how do you respond to feminists who try to silence you? What do you do when someone tries to shut down your arguments? It's a tough question, and it really depends. It depends on who you're talking to, it depends on what you're talking about, it depends on the context of the situation. There are a lot of factors that might go into how you would respond. But ultimately, you have to determine how open the person is to discussion. Although, if they are trying to shut you down, or they simply refuse to listen to you, they're probably not mature enough to have an educated conversation. Maybe something you said hit a moral nerve, and they don't want to deal with that baggage. Chances are your best bet is to simply opt out of the conversation. If the person is not willing to talk to you, there's not really a lot you can do about it. I will say that what you don't want to do is argue with them. Don't try to force them to think. Don't belittle them. Don't make them angrier than they already are, because anything you say can and will be held against you in the future. If you sink to their level and start spouting insults, they have an easy excuse to just dismiss you. Well, he was just an asshole, so I don't have to listen to him. But if you're sincere and simply argue your point, with any luck, they might look back on the conversation later when they've cooled off and think, maybe he did have a point. Or maybe they won't. You won't be able to reach everyone, and that's just the reality of the situation. Some people are more stubborn than others, and if you try to fight each of them, you're gonna burn out real quick. Instead, just say your piece, listen to theirs, and try to keep a level head. It might be hard not to get upset, especially when they start to insult you, but, and I hate to use this phrase, but you have to just try to be the better man. But that's all the questions I have for now. Be sure to tune in next week for your regularly scheduled programming. And so that's it for this episode of Romeo And. As always, if you have a story you want featured on the podcast, send me a message via email, contact@stsaint.com, or give me a call, 516-514-7878. Also, be sure to follow me on social media, like Romeo And on Facebook, or follow me on Twitter @street_saint. New episodes of Romeo And are published weekly, so make sure you get every episode when it's released by subscribing to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or the podcatcher of your choice. But if you do nothing else, just go to iTunes and Stitcher and leave us a 5-star rating. There's nothing more valuable for the show than getting a bunch of good ratings from all of you guys. Thanks again for listening. I am Street Saint, and I'll see you next time.